Democrats swept into office in 2008 and eventually took over the entire Harris County judiciary. They were supported by George Soros. They are attacking within their own ranks any criminal court judge who does not free on PR bonds the worst of the worst thugs. So right now, at this very moment, Officer Bill Jeffrey is being laid to rest at Grace Church. His friends, family, supporters, fellow officers from around the country have arrived to pay their respects. Because a guy was out because of Judge Greg Glass, who's done this 7 times now. This just keeps happening again and again and again. So imagine Paul Castro's frustration that this thug who shot and killed his son and continued to chase them after shooting him, then burned the car, went into hiding, that this guy has now been freed on a bond. Paul Castro is our guest. Sir, thank you for being here.
Appreciate the time. Thank you, Mike.
You're at the courthouse now?
I am.
Related to this case?
Yes, I am.
Do you have an update?
Yeah, so I just found out that been sent downstairs to get an ankle monitor placed on him. Later, the judge is going to bring him up and give him the terms of his bail and, put an ankle bracelet on him. He's supposed to be under house arrest 24/7. But also, I think we all know that that's only as good as a monitoring system and the, understaffed, overworked people who are trying to keep our streets safe.
Well, you probably already know, but every one of these guys that gets out and commits another crime, they just clip their ankle monitor and nothing is done about it. And they end up back out on the streets committing these crimes. Tell me as much as you can about what happened that day.
Started off me excited about taking my sons to the game. We're going to the Astros game. We got good tickets and went down there after the game, got back in our vehicles, trying to explain to my son how important it is to drive safely on the streets. He was quite nervous, 17-year-old, going to his senior year, just the nicest kid you could ever meet. As we're driving down, traffic said basically a complete stop and finally starts to move. I was driving my F-150. I was in lane 3. Getting emptied out because they were closing it off to let a parking lot empty. And so everyone, law-abiding people who know how to follow rules, get in line and all that kind of stuff, had already gotten out of that lane. I let a person from that lane in. I let 2 people from the lane 2, but we hadn't moved in 5 minutes. And I felt bad about the people behind me, so I started moving forward right at that. Take a spot anyway. So he starts to wedge in. And I was thinking, I've already let and on who he is, and he pushes up into the lane, bumps into my vehicle, and I was like, what the hell just happened? And my son, Dave, he says, Dad, I think that guy just hit our truck. And I said, yeah, I know, son. I said, don't worry about it. It's going to be fine. And he kept trying to wedge in, and at that point, no one's moving. It's not like I back up and let him in. We're right next to the place where the officer blocked off lane 4, gets out of his yelling at me. And as he's yelling at me, I point to the lane in front of me, and all I say is, dude, I've let 3 people in. So everyone's talking about hand gestures. That's my hand gesture. I had my 2 sons in the car. I wasn't F-bombing them, flipping them off. I'm not an idiot. I pointed the lane. I said, dude, I've let 3 people in. Well, the officer stops my vehicle. He gets in. So he got in. We proceed. My son gets nervous. I decide, I'm going to, even though I live in the Galleria area, I'm going to go east, not west. So as we merge on the I-10, I decide to make a right. He's in the left lane. I'm thinking this is over. And right then the guy gets behind me. My son turns to me and says, Dad, that guy, he's behind us. And I said, God, Jesus Christ, what's going to happen? I said, I know, son, I'm sorry, but it's going to be okay. Well, he proceeds to start flashing his lights, staying right on my tail. I can't even see his lights. He's that close. And then I was like, I got to get away from this guy. So I just gunned it. My truck needed to go to the shop. It wasn't doing its best. It was probably going 80, 85 miles an hour. The guy's following me. He's right behind me. I try to lose him. Finally, I decide I'm going to have to do a U-turn. I'm going to try to go back to the city, because if I get stranded out, who knows what will happen if I'm out in East Houston. So I make a turnaround. When I make a turnaround, I cut across four lanes of traffic thinking this is going to lose him. It doesn't. He follows. David turns around. He says, Daddy's still behind us. I said, I know, son. It's going to be okay. I see the lights about to turn red at the intersection. I cut across lanes of traffic to hit the U-turn lane. The guy does the same. And as we come out of the U-turn lane, I see vehicles approaching. So I'm yielding, not thinking this guy's going to shoot at me or anything. And as I slowed up just a little bit, all of a sudden I heard a gunshot, another gunshot, glass exploded. And that son of a bitch took two shots at us, not knowing who was in the truck. And I sat there and I thought, and I turned around because I didn't hear anything from my kids. And I said, Luke, backseat, are you okay? And he said, I'm okay, Dad, but I don't think David's okay. And I'm driving madly. The guy's still behind me. I'm trying to figure out what the hell's going on. And I look, and yeah, he had hit my son in the head. So he continued chasing us for about another 3 miles after that. I called 911, was finally able to pull over and get assistance, but he was dead on contact.
I can't imagine. So it was you and your two sons?
That's correct.
And they were in the back seat?
David was in the passenger seat. My other son was in the back seat.
So at this...
So when I hit the gas to get away, that's when the bullet, it was supposed to be, which I wish it had, moved just a smidgen of a degree. That's what caught my son.
And then he continued to chase you for some period of time after that?
Yes, he did. That's police officers looking at video cam from the traffic cameras said and confirmed that he chased us basically all the way back from Wayside all the way back to the 288-59 cutoff south, which is where we turned off to try to go to the hospitals. But by then, 911 told me they could coordinate and by McGowan on 288. And that's where the emergency vehicles met us.
And how did you get away from him? Did you make a turn that he wasn't able to make, or?
I think he just decided at that point, because I had the cab light on, he may have looked at it, seeing that he had already done the damage he wanted to do. And so he decided another direction. You know, people keep saying, well, if I were in your position, I would have, you know, shot back if I had my gun. No, you wouldn't have. You know, this is not Hollywood. This is like real life. I had two boys in my truck. There were random cars all around. You know, what was I supposed to do? You know, turn around, start shooting into traffic, you know, and ram them, you know, like really seriously. That's an idea. So something that could happen to any family in Houston. He had no idea who I was. He had no idea who my child was. He's a two-time felon who has gun convictions on his history. And that guy killed my son.
I wouldn't wish what you've gone through on my worst enemies.
Correct. I would not wish this on. It would be wrong for anyone to hurt his child. He's got parents. I don't wish it on. I hate to say this because it sounds so weird. I wouldn't wish someone gunning down him in front of his parents. The horror of seeing that is not something I can get over. It's going to go to me in my grave, and I know that.
Wow. Can you hold with me for just a moment?
Sure.
All right, stay right there. We'll continue our conversation with Paul Castro coming up.
The Michael Berry Show. Michael Berry Show.
Paul Castro is the father of David Castro, who was murdered by a thug who has now been allowed to walk free. Oh, he'll have an ankle monitor on while he continues with his life. Paul, take me from the moment that you meet the emergency vehicles at I guess at 288.
Yeah, so that was, and they took David out, put him in the ambulance, had us follow the ambulance down to the medical center, and we were able to meet up at the hospital. It was kind of a nightmare scenario. There's no other way to put it. So I had my other son who was riding in the back seat, traumatized, you know, obviously.
Of course. How old is he?
He's a freshman in high school. He's 14.
Okay, so you had 14 and 17. So a freshman and a senior.
So we got to the hospital and, you know, get jammed up in the bureaucracy of checking in and behind people who have, you know, 99.8 degree fevers and, you know, waiting. They put us in a waiting room. His mom shows up along with my daughter, who's a freshman in college. They were returning from a family visit in Detroit and had landed at the airport that night. So we had my son calling them while I was on the phone with 911 coordinating. And so we wait and they bring in the clergyman. And that's when I realized, like, you know, I held his head. He had a gunshot wound in the back of the head. This is not, doesn't require a medical doctor to figure out what the hell's going on.
Right.
They finally let us back. He had maintained a pulse to the emergency room and let us know that they weren't going to do any kind of operation. It was beyond help at that point. We asked for a second opinion and a third opinion, and all opinions came back. And it was a long, I didn't sleep for 2 nights. Stayed with him, making decisions about, you know, what to do next. You know, officers, I didn't realize how protocol is. If someone gets shot, they dispatch an officer to your room because they don't know what exactly happened. And
right.
Didn't know if someone might be following up and trying to, you know, finish the job, so to speak. So the officer was there, and I let him know that, you know, someone was brain dead and that it was going to be a murder trial, and they needed to get, you know, ready to find this killer. And they've been unbelievable this entire time. I want to make that very, very clear. Thankful for the support and the care and concern by the detectives and the police force and hunting down and finding his killer and the people of Houston and doing that. But, you know, in that immediate aftermath, you know, I don't think anyone thinks about just the logistics and business of, again, you know, middle of the night calling my mom, calling my brother, you know, nobody wants that phone call at midnight. And all those calls were made. People started descending on the hospital. And we sat days while we made decisions about donating his organs. Had to say goodbye. So, what should have been the beginning of a senior year turned out to be preparations for a burial.
When was the burial?
Oh, it's all a blur. It was the 16th of July.
Oh, wow. This is still very, very fresh. How is it Luke, your other son?
Yeah, Luke.
How is
so
he?
Luke, as a 14-year-old, you know, he's just trying to bury it. I mean, just to be honest, he's just doing his best, but he's trying to, you know, put all that behind him in his mind, and he's, you know, trying to live his life as a high schooler. But, you know, he, we have him, everybody's got their own personal counselors, you know, and he just really doesn't want to talk about it because it was such a horrific thing and he doesn't want to revisit it. And I don't blame him. Every time I talk about it, over again, but I need to tell the story so that people know what happened and know how easy it could have been them.
And how did you feel when you got the call to say they're going to let this guy out on the street pending, you know, for the next, as you said, 3 or 4 years while the quote unquote criminal justice ecosystem is rebuilt? How did you feel to know that?
There's not a word. I can tell you what happened to my body. I had to pull over and I saw the automated system phone number pull up on the screen. performing band at the football game Friday night, and I saw that come up, and I thought, this cannot, you know, hello, this is Texas Vine, letting you know that blah, blah, blah. And as soon as I heard what had happened, you know, from a robocall, I felt like someone had poured boiling water down my throat. I was about to explode. All I could think of is the kinds of thoughts that I think every father thinks when they, if they were put in a similar situation. I was on fire. I wasn't sad anymore. I'd been dealing with this horrible tragedy and loss and just really been in a mournful state and a grief-ridden state. I went to blind rage. Let's just say it's good that I have a reason to live. You know, with my two sons, my son and my daughter. And you know, I don't want to wind up doing anything stupid. And so I'm going to do the best I can to be the best person I can. And that is use this as an opportunity to do something better. But that night was a horrible, horrifying night. It's the first time I felt the level of rage that I felt. Because every other time, you know, in the immediate aftermath, the rage was matched up against grief, mourning, and loss. And now that rage is by itself. I still am mourning my son. But just the fact that that guy gets to go home without an ankle bracelet on a Friday night. He played the game. He got released on a Friday night on purpose so he could have a whole weekend without an ankle bracelet, walk around our streets, walk around our community, take advantage of gaps in the legal system so that he could go and party up and have a great time and God knows what else and be a threat to your family, my family, every other family in the city of Houston. Sickened me. And it has me purposeful about needing to change this system. This is not okay. This is not what I grew up for. It's not what my dad fought in Vietnam for, what my grandfather fought in WW2 in Italy for. This is not what this is.
Paul,
I'm tired.
Hold right there.
Of being
right
on there. That side of the equation.
Hold right there for just one moment.
The Michael Berry Show.
Many rivers to cross, but I can't seem to find my way over. Wandering, I am lost as I travel along white cliffs of Dover.
Paul Castro is our guest, and I'm betting he would give anything for me not to know his name, because the reason I do is a tragedy that will be a part of his life for the rest of his life. What does this do to a family? Does it bring you closer? How are you all handling this?
Yeah, I mean, it has to bring you closer, or else it'll break you. My daughter attends college up in the Northeast near Boston. And she questioned, you know, even though she's on scholarship, she questioned whether she should go back or just stay. And we had, you know, a few long conversations trying to honor her wishes. But at the end of the day, she decided to go back. David's brother, Luke, is in the band, the same band that David would have been, the percussion section. And so, you know, ghost drum that they bring, the drum he would have played, is in the stands on Friday night by itself. And it's hard. It's hard for Luke to be, you know, two people over from where his brother should have been, except for this murderer. Going to the games, needless to say, is both and horrific at the same time, because it's impossible for a father not to know that this is not how it should have been. So we're each on our own journeys. We're each trying to figure this out on our own, and then together as well. But, you know, we can be side by side with each other, and it's still, you know, grief is personal. Grief is very lonely. And right now we're just trying to do everything we can to be there for each other. Thankfully, the city of Houston, friends and family have been unbelievable in their support, helping us navigate these horrific 12 weeks. And it hadn't been for them, you know, I don't think I'd be in a state of mind to be able to even talk to you today. But because of their support, you know, here we are.
Tell me about David.
David's probably the nicest kid you ever. This summer, he was informed by the school that T scores were high enough that he was qualified for, and probably, and would, you know, will be announced later. He would have been an analyst. He probably would have had a full ride to come. He was interested in either going to Texas A&M or Purdue, studying engineering, and his interest was in helping solve America's energy crisis, and he wanted to be a part of that. He was a friend to all. He was a kid. I had a lot of parents reach out and say, you know, I didn't even know this happened, but, you know, your son would text my child, you know, if they missed a day in school, just to check on them, see how they're doing. Not something he bragged about. He was a quiet kid. He was real quiet, kept to himself. He was, you know, awkward in that way, but he was a sweet kid. And he was afraid of, he didn't even want to get a driver's license because he knew how dangerous the streets in Houston are. And I kept pushing him, no, son, you gotta drive. You know, we're not going to drive you to band practice. You got to figure this out. And loved taking driving lessons, but he was so afraid of what might happen to him on the streets, he wouldn't even get on a major road. And I was trying to help him understand that it's safe out there, son. And I lied. It's not safe out there. So he was a gentle kid. Son of a bitch killed him.
Are you still driving that truck?
No, thank God. I begged my insurance agent to total it. A friend of mine had to go to it to retrieve some items, and he said, you don't. I thought I was going to need to get some stuff out of there. He said, no, don't go back to that truck. So it's been totaled, and I'm in a different vehicle, one that can drive 140 if needed. I'm not going to let this happen to me again.
Do you still beat yourself up? Because I always hear it said that parents, you're such a protector that you start questioning everything. What could I have done differently?
Correct. Every day I think of myself as a 66.6. I had three children, now I have two. I didn't protect my son when I needed to.
Do you know the name of the judge who has released this thug?
It was a traveling judge. I do know the name. The traveling judge is the one who set the bail at three. Having talked to the ADA, my understanding was that follows guidelines. The max bail that would have been allowed was 500. It's a non-capital case. Because it's a non-capital case, they couldn't have a no bail. They had to have a bail. It could have shown, you know, set at 350, so I'm pissed about that. And I don't know how he got out. I'm very to find out how that man, you know, got here on his own accord today. Drove. My son's sitting in a box at a freaking funeral home. That son of a bitch is free, and he's going to have a bracelet on. And if they monitor him well, he might get in trouble if he gets out, but must be carrying a gun anyway. It's a double felon. And he had a gun, and he shot my son with it. Mm-hmm. So I have no faith in the system keeping my family safe or your family safe or anyone else's family safe mm-hmm. from that murderous bastard.
Do we know if the gun he was carrying was stolen?
Oh, he got rid of it. He burned his car. I mean, he tried to sell the rims. He's that dumb. Able to ascertain that's what it was. He moved it one entire block away from where he lived to set it on fire and try to burn the evidence. So he's not a bright person, which causes me greater concern. If he were smart, well, he probably wouldn't have shot my son in the first part. He'd be less of a threat to the community, but he's so dumb. He is a threat to the community because he can't figure out consequences. And if he already is up for the death penalty, why wouldn't he? What's the risk? He's already up for the death penalty.
Right.
He has no skin in the game at this point. He can do whatever he wants. That's a problem.
Which is apparently what he's done his entire life, reviewing his record.
Yeah, I think that's four criminal convictions, two felonies with a weapon. This is not a good human being.
No,
so all this thing about innocent until proven guilty, he's not innocent. He's twice convicted. Not innocent. son, not innocent. He was out. Being out isn't innocent. Being out is out.
And Lord knows what else he's ever done in his life that he hasn't been called for. Paul Castro.
Sorry you broke up there, Michael.
Yeah, that's all right. Thank you for sharing your story. Thank you very much.
And you guys have a good day, and hopefully we'll come together to get this system fixed.
Let's hope so. Let's hope so. These guys should not be out walking the streets, but the Democrats are determined that they will be. And make no mistake, this is the consequence of Democrat decisions.